Hey Bruins! This week on BSP, we're chatting with Carlo Valdez, a financial strategist with World Financial Group and former Olympic athlete.
All right, Carlo. So to start us off today, tell us what you studied at UCLA and what you've done leading up to your current role.
Yes. Yeah, so here between 2008, 2013, I studied history. Well, actually, I started out in sociology, and then I switched majors. So just chose that just because I wanted to do pre-law or some kind of law degree here at the time, but UCLA didn't offer it. They had the law school, obviously, but there's no pre-law or law undergrad. So I left history there. Plus with sports, I just felt like it was manageable. And as far as like how that transfers to what I'm doing now, well, it's a long story. So I wanted to get into real estate development initially. And after 2 weeks of trying to find jobs in that space, after I graduated 13, I realized that my sports career wasn't done yet. And I know we'll go into my time as an athlete, you know, since being a kid through UCLA and then through bobsled in the Olympics. But I just knew my athletic career wasn't over. So that's when I went out for bobsled and then did that for 8 years. And then after 2018, that's when I got into my field of financial services, and been doing that for the past 5.5 years. And, you know, was with a financial planning firm, now more independent, and I can broker deals, whether it's on the insurance side or the wealth management side. And yeah, it's great because I'm my own boss, and it's it's very flexible, and it's a producing role and a business building role, so it leads to a lot of options in the future. So
I want to get into a little more of your athletic career. If you could walk us through, like you said, your journey, it sounded like started even before UCLA, to being an athlete at UCLA, to being an Olympian, and especially getting into bobsledding. We're in Southern California. It's not necessarily the first sport that comes to mind.
No. Yeah. So yeah, grew up in sports since like 4 or 5 years old. Did like everything as a kid, which is like, I highly recommend it for any parents trying to figure out what their kids want to do, is just throw them in everything. So I did soccer, football, track, basketball, baseball. And then as I got older, yeah, I kind of focused more on football and track. Once I got in like junior high, that was really what I was focused on. And then once I got into high school, still local, I went to Mater Dei High School in Orange County, Santa Ana. And then, yeah, as far as how the path to UCLA happened, it was actually a fallback school. yeah, because I had scholarships to like Washington State and Arizona State. And then because of coaching changes, those fell through. So then it came down to either UCLA or Oregon as like an option just to walk on the team at an early stage before, you know, school started and everything like that happened. So chose UCLA just because, you know, I've always been a Bruin. I've never liked the Trojans. Yeah, so to me, that was an easy choice. And yeah, so I came in 2008, was on the football team, Rick Neuhaus's first year, and went through that whole first season. I redshirted, did scout team. And for those who don't know what scout team is it's pretty much like practice squad for the NFL, where you're the one giving the look for the first team defense for that week. And we're pretty much playing all the time. Like we're practicing all the time. So it was fun. And I still talk to a lot of those guys today, especially the guys I came in with that freshman class. And while spring football was going on, I was doing both that and track, and it was just too much. So I just focused in on track, did decathlon my first year. And for those who don't know what decathlon is, it's 10 events, 5 per day. See, it's 100, 110 hurdles, long jump, high jump, shot put, discus, javelin, pole vault, 1500 and 400. Yeah, it's a lot.
Gosh, that's all in two days of time. That's a lot to train for.
Yeah.
So many different things.
Yeah. And then coaching changes happened, but didn't matter if my coach stayed or if it was a new coach that came in that told me I was going to do javelin for the rest of the time there. It was going to happen no matter what. So I ended up throwing javelin for the next 4 years. And yeah, that's when I was getting bigger and stronger, really, which is kind of like setting up the whole bobsled thing. Because my coach is the one that came in after my first year, that second year, he's the one that told me I should try out for the team when I was done. And I had two other teammates who were 2 years ahead of me that went out once they graduated in 2011, and they had made the team. So he's like, all right, if those guys can make it, then you can make it. And finally, the time came in 2013 where, it was either, going to real estate development, like I was talking about, or actually go out for the team and just, see if it works out or not. So that's how that all happened. I went out, took his advice, and yeah, had a pretty decent track career here. Was on the top 10 list for javelin, had good results, Letterman all my years. But yeah, the transition was actually ideal because I was strong and fast. So that's really what bobsled is. And then just developing within the sport. So yeah, one thing led to another. I kept doing well. I kept, rising the ranks. And after that first year in 2014, I was on USA One, and then I stayed on USA One up until, last year through, the Beijing Winter Olympics. So yeah, kind of it led to a pretty nice career.
Was that always the goal that you had in mind? Was it always, I really like bobsledding, this is my thing now, I want to go to the Olympics, or just the love of the sport, I'll see how far I can take it? What was the thought process? Was that intentional?
Bob said no. But like the mindset was always the same, because whenever I did something, I always want to be the best at it. It didn't matter if it was, track or football or last case bobsled or whatever it was. Like I just like, all right, if I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do the best I can at it and like try to be the best at it. So that was always my mindset. While I was playing football, I wanted to get to the NFL. When I was doing track, I wanted to make the Summer Olympics. And then once bobsled came up, I'm like, all right, this is, I mean, my last shot really, and I gotta, have an opportunity to make the Winter Olympics. So yeah, I mean, that's just always been my mindset as far as like my approach to anything. And it's, transitioned and transferred into business now. And yeah, it's just, I mean, it's super important to have that just so you have the drive and motivation to do everything and have the discipline to get whatever you need to get done. So yeah, that's a common question people ask, like how, like, even though like some goals changed, but like what about your mindset? Like, did anything else change? Like, it didn't really change at all, honestly. So it was just learning a new skill, I guess. Yeah.
Being adaptable too, I
Yeah.
guess.
Yeah.
And I love, I guess, such good timing for you too, that you graduated or were able to be around the time that the Winter Olympics came up too, to have that opportunity as well. Kind of that just synergistic moment.
Yeah. I went out right when the Sochi games were going on, so it was more of like a foot in the door for
Yeah.
once those games were done. So yeah, it was pretty good timing.
In terms of where that mindset comes from, obviously you've been in sports your entire life. Was that something that came just from that experience, or were there any coaches or mentors or people that were helping you along the way? Where does that mindset come from?
Yeah, I think it was just the culmination of everything that had gone on, and that, to that point, just from being a kid, my dad was pretty strict on like just certain things, so I kind of got molded into certain things and being disciplined. Didn't matter what the sport was, just like always getting the work done, working hard, proving yourself day in and day out. And then yeah, of course, other coaches along the way, were definitely, helpful and provide a lot of guidance as I grew up. Just everyone helped in their own way. And then there's also like trial and error stuff where like you might hear something, you might try to implement it and it doesn't work, and you just move on and try something else. And over time, you figure out what works and what doesn't work for you, and you stick with it. And if you stick with something for a long period of time, you're gonna get really good at it. So I just kept it simple in my mind. I mean, at some points though, I might have put too much pressure on myself. But luckily I was able to realize that, like, say after high school. In high school, I put a lot of pressure on myself and it wasn't good. And then when I got here to UCLA, I kind of took it too far and was a little too relaxed here. But that being said, I mean, it's college. I think everyone should like enjoy their college experience because it's only 4 or 5 years. So yeah, I did that while still, you know, I was still competitive and I was still like working towards a goal. It just wasn't as serious as I wanted to be in hindsight. But once, you know, bobsled happened and once I graduated, then, you know, the switch flipped again to where I'm like, all right, if I want to make this work, I got to get serious. You know, everything that I did paid off essentially. So yeah, focusing on myself, really not worrying about anyone else,
which is, you know,
hard to do.
Yeah. And I'm curious to you mentioned this, and I want to dive into a little bit more about like that mindset for, you know, being an athlete and on the Olympic level, but then also in your business, and you did both at the same time and they kind of overlap. So how is that mindset shift, or what commonalities kind of helped handle both, not just separately but together?
It was easy between 2014 and 2018 because I just focused on competing and training, so that was like my job then. I didn't have to worry about working at that point. Like, I was actually making okay money from like prize winnings, some sponsorship stuff and things like that, when like my overhead was like literally like $300 to $500 a month. But then yeah, after the 2018 Winter Olympics, which were in Pyeongchang, Korea, I knew I couldn't like continue to have my life on hold anymore. So I had to find a career that worked in alignment with, you know, if I did come back full time to bobsled, like I could do both at the same time, work and train. So that's when I found, yeah, financial services. I was with a firm before I went independent. So with that firm, I couldn't do both. But it, at least it gave me the idea of like what I needed to do in order to do both. So after 18 months there, 2019, that's when I started training again for the next World Cup seasons and leading up to 2022, last year in Beijing. Yeah, I went independent fully, became a business owner while still producing. And yeah, it was tough. It was very challenging. I had to make a living on top of putting time and effort towards getting the best training I could for the season, because it's like pretty much two full-time jobs, I guess.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I would work 8 to 12 hours a day, depending on the day. And then I'd have to find the motivation and the time to go work out for another 2 to 3 hours at some point throughout the day. So it got pretty tough, pretty exhausting, but I was like, all right, I'm in it. I'm like, this is it for me. So I have to find a way to make this work, essentially. And when COVID happened, that kind of helped, because I was able to now work remotely, and I was able to go back up to Lake Placid, New York, which is our headquarters. And yeah, I was working sparingly as I needed to, just to like kind of keep my head above water, and shifted to training more throughout the day once 2020 hit, and then, you know, through 21, through 22. And yeah, it was it was the ultimate challenge.
I'm exhausted just thinking of, and like it makes me anxious just thinking about it. I mean, you had to, yeah, every minute had to be scheduled, it seems, yeah, to make sure you got everything done. But I mean, yeah, that mentality of I'm in it, so we got to get it done somehow. We got to figure out a way.
This is, for me, such a cool window into what it takes to actually succeed in all realms of professional life, like your career as an athlete, but then also your career in finance. Just, I don't think people truly understand like how much it takes to get there. There are a lot of people that dream about the Olympics. There are a lot of people that aspire towards that. And then of course, all of us watching at home are like, oh my gosh, these are the cream of the crop, the best of the best. What was going through your head when you were training to push you towards the Olympics? And then, you know, you get the clock counts down when you're ready to jump in. What was going through your mind actually competing?
Yeah, well, competing, that's, I mean, it's a whole other story. I mean, as far as like the lead up, I was lucky to have that discipline growing up and all through all that. So for me, it wasn't really, I didn't need motivation. You know, it was really just like the discipline that I had that was getting me through everything, because I'm like, all right, I just got to do it. My goal is to win an Olympic medal. So, I mean, that's just enough motivation to get out of bed every morning and train and do whatever you needed to do. Because there are days where you're not going to be motivated and you're just going to be like, wow, this is tough. So you just got to fall back on the discipline and just like stick with the schedule, stick with the routines. And, you know, at the end of the day, you look back and I say, okay, like, I'm glad I did that, even though I didn't feel my best today. But in competitions, like I had a crazy routine. Like anyone who knows me knows like how crazy it was and what I did. Because I mean, I mentally prepare a lot for every race because I know on the schedule when it is, and I know, okay, I have to be my absolute best on this day, and then whether it's world championships or Olympics, like my mind knows when those days are. Yeah, when those race days came, I would have a routine where like I would get up to like, you know, aside from like visualizing everything, I'd get up to like a gram of caffeine, which is 1,000 milligrams, sometimes even more. And I would just get in this like crazy, crazy mindset where it's just like, all right, I take nerves completely out of it. And it's just like, all right, I know what I got to do. I got to trust what I do. And I just like, I'm not thinking at all. Running on instincts and trusting all the training I've done to that point is going to work. And you just operate, you know, with a blank mind, really. After the race is done, then you kind of snap back to reality. Like I took that mental preparation very seriously and that race day routine seriously, and it always worked out. Yeah, of course, there may be some races where I didn't perform as well as I should have, but most of the time I was fully dialed in.
That is so interesting. And as you were talking, very, very different level, but we're both musicians. You said you can take nerves out of it. And I'm like, how do you do that? Because that is like just performing in front of people. The one time that I did have nerves come out of it was the time that I have never prepared more for a performance, and it was memorized and I was terrified for it. I blacked out for the entire performance. It was recorded, so I think it went well, but I relied on my instincts and I was just like, we're just going to see how this goes.
Yeah.
So not nearly the level of Olympics, but you said nerves to come out of it. And I was like,
it's really interesting. Like the switch that you can kind of flip in your brain sometimes where like being over-prepared is being prepared enough. Like you want to, with music, at least you want to do it so many times that even if you make a mistake, it's like, you could barely perceive it.
Exactly.
I think the only time, like, it sounds almost like out of body for you. Like,
oh, yeah.
I've only experienced that a handful of times with performing, and it's the weirdest thing coming out of it and being like, oh, it's over.
It was truly like an out of body experience the one time that I really felt it. And
instincts do take over.
Instincts do take over.
Yeah.
So that's such an interesting, like,
feeling
and you know, you train so much for this that it kind of just becomes second nature almost.
And then I would go to a pretty dark place to like draw like some emotions that would elevate it even more. It's crazy what like the mind can do to like, you know, get the body in tune with, you know, what you're trying to accomplish. So yeah, it's pretty powerful. Also just attracts that, I feel like. It's just, there's a lot of crazy guys on race day, you know, who just turn into a different person. That's just completely normal. Yes. Watching other people do it when I started, I'm like, I gotta do that. And then I wish I had done it earlier, like, you know, here at UCLA or in high school, because that was the way to do it. But I mean, I guess it's just all experience. You don't know until you experience enough. And
wait, so, okay, you're from SoCal, is that correct? Mm-hmm. So you said headquarters were in Lake Placid, New York. So did you train there? I'm now just curious. Do you always train there, or are there places in SoCal you can train too?
Well, when I'm home, it's just, you know, lifting, sprinting, tri-line pushes, like on a rogue sled or a prowler sled, whether it's on like turf or cement. Yeah, the only places where you can get like specific training, whether it's in an ice house or like a dry land push track, is either in Park City, which they have a dry land push track, Lake Placid, which had a dry land push track for a long time. And we finally have an ice house that was completed in 2020, 2021. Before that, we actually had to go up to Calgary to use that ice house. And because that was the only one in North America that we can utilize for anyone that doesn't know what an ice house is, it's pretty much an indoor facility that allows us to practice our starts, and we can do as many reps as we can year round. We don't have to worry about, you know, outside weather conditions, because it's all controlled inside. For those who don't know what a start looks like in bobsled, you start like on a 15, 20 meter flat, and then it goes down on a steep decline. And then from there, on a regular track, you continue to go on the track. But in an ice house, you know, you just go down and you reach a low point, and then you go up to stop it, and then it comes back.
Okay, so it's not a full track.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I also have a really stupid question now that I have you, because I just I love watching bobsled in the Olympics. Is every track different?
Every track's different, yeah.
And so, I mean, the Olympics, you usually get there a little early, like you get there early and can train on that track, right? So you have to, like, because you have your team and you essentially just, not that you know, but you memorize kind of every turn and kind of how
the feel,
the
right?
feel of it, knowing shifting things, I don't,
weight, all that.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the pilot, like, sees what's actually going on. Everyone else is like down and looking down. We can't see anything because we got to be in an aerodynamic position.
Oh my god, so you're doing this blind?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
but you know the track because you memorize it. You've seen enough. Yeah. Like, there's like POV videos you can watch. Okay. You can do track walks to see what it looks like, how it could potentially feel. But yeah, you get really good at just feeling where you are.
Yeah.
And you know, if it's a hard left or hard right or soft or, you know, abrupt or long or short, it's just, you get really good at just feeling, and you're not necessarily leaning in the sled. That's like a common misconception, because a lot of people refer to the bathtub scene in Cool Runnings. I don't know if you've seen that, but that's why people say that. But we don't do that, because if we lean too much, you'll create like a lot of top heavy force for the pilot. So that means more steering, that means more friction, that means you're going to be slower. If anything, you're just leaning your head slightly just to anticipate the turn so you don't get whiplash, because that does happen, where your helmet could hit the side of the cowling of the sled. That's not good either. So
how fast are these sleds going?
Depending on the track, could be anywhere between 85 and 95 miles an hour.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think people really realize,
they don't
that
realize
this is,
it.
This is actually dangerous.
I'm always fascinated watching bobsled in the Olympics. My mind is just being blown.
Drive at 95 on a windy road with a blindfold on, Kelsey, and then maybe you'll get a
car at 80.
Yeah.
Like, I won't even drive my own car that fast. So,
yeah,
that's insane.
You learn something new every day.
Yeah,
this is amazing. We could talk your ear off all day
about I know. There's too much to talk about, honestly.
It's very rare that we, first of all, meet an Olympian, but then an Olympic bobsledder, you know, we're both from Southern California too, and we don't know anything about snow or about the cold weather or winter sports. So it's very interesting to get to dissect the minutiae of all of this. But yeah. Just so we get to touch on your finance career as well, what is the most rewarding part of that job for you?
I mean, I get to work with people. So yeah, my passion now is passing on what I've learned onto others. So it's like coaching in a way. Did do coaching, whether it was track or football or just personal training or, you know, whatever. I did that through college and then sparingly now, and more so now and towards the future. When I have kids, I want to coach them. But yeah, now this is just, you're coaching people in finance to let them know how money works. You know, what they should do to protect their assets, what they should do to grow their wealth, what they should do to preserve it, and how to distribute that money to themselves once they want to start pulling from it in retirement. So it's really cool to be able to now see myself as the expert in that field and let them know, say, hey, this is what I would do if I were in your shoes based upon your situation, because everyone's different. It's never going to be cookie cutter. It's always going to be, you know, custom tailored to wherever that person's at, or family or business. And yeah, you're pretty much just helping them understand like what to do. I mean, right now, especially, it's pretty tough for a lot of people financially. So it's just working with them to get them a spot where at least they have some peace of mind. And then, you know, for other people and for other businesses, they're in a much better spot. So it's just really what they're trying to do to diversify their portfolio, or maybe fill in a gap that's, you know, that they've been missing for a while now. It's cool to be that guy that they come to for advice. And really, I just try to do my best to level with them, you know, see where they're at and help them where they want to go. So that's really all it is you're just solving problems and creating solutions for them.
And I really like how you said you're kind of like a coach for them too, because I think that you don't necessarily think about that, but it is like you're helping them and solving a problem, finding a solution, but helping them along the way like a coach would.
Yeah.
So I think that
well, financial planning too is a lifelong process. So having someone kind of along the way, all the different life milestones, I think is really important. And at least for me personally, I'm getting closer to 30 and I never really thought about any of this stuff when I was younger. It was mom and dad were helping me out with some things. And then you don't think about it when you're in college all the time. Some people do, but I was lucky enough to be in a place where I could focus mainly on school, had some jobs, but now in the real world, it is like, oh, there's so many things to be aware of, so many things for yourself and for what you want for the future. And there really is like a power in that, being able to know where you're at now, see what you want, and then set yourself up on a path to be able to achieve that.
Yep.
And having people help you. I know where I want to be.
Yeah. How do I get
there? I want to be a millionaire. How did I get there?
Yeah.
Not quite that. I would like to retire comfortably.
Yeah.
How do I get there?
Well, I mean, in this economy, you will have to be a millionaire to retire comfortably.
Probably. Who knows? But yeah, but I love that.
What's a piece of advice for someone that is maybe just trying to understand their finances on like a very early level? Like, I think a lot of people are a little scared by it. Like it's a big deal. And especially if you are kind of in a shaky financial place, sometimes you don't want to look at the numbers. It's intimidating. Yeah.
As far as like when I was in college, and some things I wish I knew looking back now was I wish I knew more about how money works, essentially. So what I mean by that is just like, all right, we were taught to, you know, get a job and then rely on the benefits that we get through our job, whether it's through the university or through a government or through a corporation. And looking back on it, it's just not enough. It's not enough. It's not going to lead to what you want in the future, because you're just going to continue to work. And plus, like with my parents too, and other people I know, it's just like we could have prepared better. And had they had worked with someone or knew these things prior, they wouldn't be in the situation they're in now. It would be much better. So one thing that I wish I knew more about as far as like seeking out information and as far as where to seek it out, there's so many resources now. It's just like people are kind of get more confused because they're like, all right, I hear this, I hear that. What is true? What is not true? I mean, it's really just doing your own research really and just like figuring out, okay, everything that I have listened to, like here are like the common themes. Like here's some things that sound too good to be true. But then again, some things that do sound too good to be true actually are true. Just like leveraging the tax code in your favor, especially for business owners. I think more people now need to understand how to create multiple sources of income. So yeah, you can work a normal W-2 job, but it's also advantageous to find something that you like to do and turn into a business. Or if you're an expert in one field, like why not turn into a business, like something you like to do? Like for me, it's like I'm really good at programming lifts, sprint workouts, things like that to help someone get to like the next level athletically. So for me, it's easy for me to like program something for someone and make a business that way and grow that. And then outside of that, besides like, you know, my business now, real estate is like a big thing where people are trying to figure out, okay, how do I buy a property or buy assets and have those cash flow for you? That's another way to do it. But yeah, it's just really seeking out information and seeking out people that you know and trust that have that information.
Lastly, so you've accomplished so much both as an athlete and as a financial expert now. What is next for you?
So yeah, I retired last year from bobsled completely. I'm not going back. There's no way. My body's just done. So I've just been really focusing on building my business as a financial strategist, mainly focusing on the insurance piece and just building that out. And then once I feel comfortable to where, you know, I have enough cash flow in that business, then I can expand that business into more maybe wealth management stuff and taking on money. but very specific. Not, I don't want to do a whole lot because then you got to hire people to help out with portfolio management, making sure that, you know, the accounts are actively managed in the proper way based upon the investor profile of someone or based on how the markets are doing. So that's a whole nother thing to worry about in the future. And then growing out my coaching business for athletes who want to be strong and fast, because that's what's going to be mainly tailored towards, and building those programs out for mainly for groups. And then over time, it'll be more one-on-one stuff, especially like in person. So building those out, and then from there, you know, it's just trying to figure out ways how to, you know, make income. I'm lucky enough to have a great circle of friends and business partners that they're very good at what they do. So I can go to them, they can come to me, and we can figure out ways how to make, you know, make more money essentially in other areas. Yeah, just enjoying myself, I guess, a little more too, because I don't have to worry about training at a high level anymore. So yeah.
You definitely deserve it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you deserve a break.
Yeah.
Enjoy some time, relax a little bit.
Yeah, I've been taking a lot of trips and making up for lost time, I guess.
That's great.
So.
Well, Carlo, thank you so much for chatting with us today. I've had so much fun. I've learned so many new things. Thank you. And to our listeners out there, go Bruins.
Yeah, go Bruins. Thank you.
The UCLA Alumni Association supports more than 660,000 Bruins worldwide with programs like the Bruin Success Podcast. Donations to the UCLA Alumni Association Support Fund help strengthen the Bruin community through impactful programs like this. You can make a donation and become a UCLA Alumni Association sustaining donor by visiting giving.ucla.edu/alumni. Thank you to all of our sustaining donors.